Thank you very much for an interesting, somewhat idiosyncratic talk. Would anybody like to kick off questions or contributions? Any comments about Trotskyists or
the generated worker states? I want to know. Yeah. Right. You can say something.
Yeah. Well, just before it starts to those I can't remember who said they were, but the ones who assumed that UFOs were
The Posadists.
Proven.
That's a very
idea. That is still being pushed. I mean, I spend quite a lot of time looking at obscure websites, and it's still being pushed. You know, that socialism, you know, or you don't use the word socialism, but proof of a better life is possible because, you know...
Because of the
little green men. Little green men, obviously, live like this. And then, of course, you've got the opposite, really, the Dawkins, not Dawkins, Hawkins, that says, oh, you know, one final, we've got to avoid them like a plague, you know, because they want to come in and kill us all, you know. So people take these little green men or whatever they are, take them very seriously.
Wasn't the other part of the Assadist programme playing to nuke the United States?
Yeah, allegedly so, yeah. They were waiting for the nuclear war to kick off and were encouraging the powers that be to actually start it, push the button. Yeah. Come on, guys, push the button, and afterwards we'll all be friends. We'll all be radioactive, but we'll all be a happy communist. Happy glow in the dark communist.
They wanted to take out the United States so that the Soviet Union would then be the world power,
yeah.
And that was their logic.
Yeah.
Add a question there. Why were militants expelled from the Labour Party? Was it because they were becoming a threat?
Yeah. They don't like. They never liked parties within parties, and basically that was what was happening. They were forming an independent. They got too big for their boots.
Right. They had Tony Benn. Were they supporting him, or was he supporting them? Maybe.
You actually said there were three MPs. Who were they actually?
Oh, do you want their names?
Yeah.
Bloody hell. I'll have to look. Well, I did bring my notes along. One of them was David David Nellis. And?
Terry Fields,
yeah.
Weren't that group supporting him for leadership or something?
No? Pat Moore, exactly. Pat Moore, David Nellis and Terry Fields.
There you go, yes.
Yeah. Pat Moore.
Yeah.
They'd also be elected as Labour MPs.
Yeah, they were elected as Labour MPs, they were deselected.
Are you finished, Nick?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure if I've misunderstood, Keith, but did you say that at least one of these groups had two MPs in this country?
Well, they had MPs called through the Labour Party, this was the Militant. Militant had three of their supporters were three of the Militant supporters were Labour MPs, and they've died or got deselected by the Labour Party eventually.
Well, it was
the same. It was pretty much the same sort of thing,
yeah.
Because until I think it was 1924 or something like that. You could be a member of the Communist Party and a member of the Labour Party at the same time.
Yeah.
It wasn't banned.
Just a final question. What is the attitude at least of some of these organisations, maybe all of them, to China?
To China?
Because... I think
probably the general impression is that I get is that they view it as a very degenerated worker state, I would imagine.
Yeah, we're okay.
First of all, Keith, can I just pick up on a little factual error that you made?
Oh, good, I'm glad to fix your
error. Just to be Captain Pedantic, but you said that you're right about militants, you know, alleged membership figures, and you're right that they have more MPs through the local than they ever did. Did you say that they have the same level of membership as the CP?
No, I never said that.
Oh, you
didn't
know? Well, in that case, I'll shut up on my
side.
It's the heathen old age.
In its day, I mean, to be fair, in 1990 they had more members than the Communist Party, but that wasn't difficult because.
I'd chart the kind of CP coming from the late 40s, early 50s. You know, they lost a third of their membership in 1956. You know, they went down to about 20,000 members. So rather than 68, you know, it was the invasion checks.
I've got you there, because as it happens, I have some figures about the Communist Party of Great Britain. I have some figures about the Communist Party and its membership. Communist Party membership reached they were at their peak during the war, because they were popular. They were populist in the mid war. They had a maximum of approximately 55,000 people. So that's probably the largest, what would you call, so called Marxist group. That's the most anyone's ever had. Was the CP during the war. They, by sort of, they've gone down a lot anyway. I mean, by the time of the Hungary thing, they had 32,000. And what they did was in the space of 2 years, right? They went down from 32 to 24. So they'd lost, what's that? That's about a quarter. But what they managed to do was, by 1964, the Communist Party actually had more members than it had 34,000 members, so it actually had more members in 1964 than it had before, before the invasion of Hungary. So it actually was able to recover from whatever Hungary did to it. But what it couldn't do is, after 1968, and when it was a progressive degeneration, after it lost its will to live, really, its reason to exist. I mean, because if you're not for the Soviet Union, what are you for? Nothing.
And to be fair, that's the argument I always use against Trotskyists now, because, you know, the only great redemption for Trotskyism in that sense was their own factional elements. You know, now we've got, what do they do? now it's all gone, you know, what do they do, what exactly?
What's the point of Trotskyism when...
So just to sort of firm it up a little bit more, I actually see the Trotskyists as quite kind of dangerous and possibly even kind of acting in the sort of like left-wing interests of capitalism, to be fair. That doesn't sound slightly sort of audacious. Because I think what they do is they're there to sort of lead... I'm not saying they're set up deliberately to do this, but the effect they have is to demobilise a lot of militant struggle by diverting people into this. And ultimately, of course, back into reformism. You know, this is ultimately the reason why I, as a young man, stopped being a Trotskyist. Quite apart from that, I couldn't put up with being in, you know, this silly discipline and these silly groups and other life. You know, but I actually see them as quite, they can be potentially debilitating. The SWP, the organisation I was in, if you look how many people have been through their ranks, and a lot of people, you know, unlike myself, who still stayed engaged in politics, you know, a lot of people basically disengage, or they just go back into old, you know, say auto-laborist, they'll vote Labour till they die. You know, so they do a lot of very dangerous, they have a very dangerous effect of helping to curb militancy, you know, within society. I'm just upset that there aren't any Trotskyists here. There was...
Are there not?
One last... There was
one last
thing, it was spoiling for a bit of a fight, or maybe it was just what I said. So, you know, I'm kind of disappointed he hasn't kind of...
Could we nominate someone to be a Trotskyist?
I can do the arguments if you want to. But, you know, yeah.
No,
you're a bunch of ultra left sectarians there, PK. How's that sound?
Yeah, that's
please
good. That's good.
Newspaper. How's that? Is that about right? I don't know.
Yeah. I deliberately did not say anything ideological. I didn't want to analyse Trotskyism from an ideological point of view, because I don't think that's what it called for. I mean, I don't think I need to say anything.
Well, what about the people that they attracted and recruited? One of the papers there mentioned up in Yorkshire, that's, I don't know how they did it, in a social event, was all this, just a group of, well, a hall full of young faces. They said they signed them up, whether that was true or not, but I mean... Obviously, there was some appeal and motivated people probably to also more into socials. And I know the party used to have socials at the early part of the 20th century, where they did have dances and also display.
Albert
Elliot. They used to have dances and they used to put up pamphlets for sale and the rest of it. But it's a wonder, like something in Russia that probably maybe the membership. Maybe knew about that they'd used as a model to say this is how we could develop. But as that became more became sort of known what it was about, you know, like maybe an open school access, but maybe in the early days it was sort of difficult, but as the years went on, and their involvements in the Cold War, what was happening inside Soviet Union to workers, those didn't toe the line, and those are probably different ideas, and you know, maybe even looks like that. But over here in say, we said that from an ideological point you didn't want to get into it, but what was the appeal really? What was the appeal? I mean, people want to get motivated on single issues. You know, we kind of say, look, it's about the big issue. All these small issues are connected to a larger system. So on that basis, ours is a bit more difficult than theirs, really.
Well, yeah, obviously. Yeah. I mean, well, it's the appeal of any Trotskyist group is the appeal of a left-wing group that goes in for reformism. Reformism is easy. It's easy to say, let's do something now. We hope in Manchester we have a guy who comes along and he says, I agree with all of the things that you say, but we need to do something now.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's easy to say we need to do something now. And you know, you can see the appeal of it.
Yeah.
The fact that actually they're not actually doing anything particularly now.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
Is it an expectation that they can't fulfil when they
actually? Oh yes, yeah. Of course, that's
them to try and get that reform. You know, bring about this change. Maybe in Militant's case, there might have been a step forward because they used to say about the numbers of housing that they were able to develop, but there was other issues about the Liverpool council, wasn't there? Where they were ousted, I think, at some stage, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Forced out. I forget to do with about selection of or employment of workers.
When they were in power, Liverpool, they behaved in exactly the same way that, anyone would.
Yeah.
Kenneth gave that famous speech, you know, from that last thing, didn't he? About, you know, a Labour council, handing out redundancy notices
So I don't.
But it wasn't response to what you're saying about young people.
Yeah.
The militant tendency controlling the Labour Party and the Socialists from the early 70s right up to the end of the 80s. Basically, a young person joined the Labour Party automatically joined the LPYS.
Yeah.
And automatically fell into the hands of the militant tendency. That's what happened to me in 1984. And yeah, I signed up a whole room full of young people. That doesn't seem beyond the news, really.
No.
I mean, that sounds plausible.
They have a system in Leeds. I know on SWP meeting I went to, I've always had to physically fight off three people to get out of the door. I joined it.
But, yeah.
And just leading on from that, I mean, I can tell you that a lot of people that I know who are in trade unions and or, you know, remained in and around the Labour Party, hate Militant Tendency and the Alliance for Liberty. But basically, what they did was that they hollowed out and collapsed an awful lot of trades, councils, union and Labour Party branches. You know, I mean, anecdotally, in Lancaster, which is where I went to university, you know, Lancaster, for some weird reason, possibly, I don't know why, attracts all different sects, historically, religiously, and in the 20th century, you know, Marxist. And I think just about all of this alphabet soup got had a branch in Lancaster at one point or another, you know. And that's excluding, you know, Paddy and the SPGB. But the local Labour Party, particularly Hilton Dawson, who ended up being the MP there, you know, hated their passion because they completely demobilised and destroyed the infrastructure of the Labour Party. In a way, you can see how, you know, and I'm talking about, you know, what we call, you know, old-fashioned Benite leftists really hate them because, you know, when the Negro bloc came along, that suddenly they had no real sort of ways and means outside a few sort of constituencies of sort of fighting the Negro bloc. So, you know, they did a lot of kind of permanent damage from that point of view to the Labour Party.
Yeah, well, I can confirm what Steve said, but 20 years earlier, or more than 20 years earlier, I wasn't a teenage Trotskyist, don't worry about it. But I was a teenage socialist. And I went to my local branch of it was called the Young Socialists there, and they were members of Keep Left. And they're very indiscreet because they actually produced a membership card. We are secretly a member of this this organisation. And they were attacking these people called the State Caps. So I said, what will you? There can't be people that openly stand for State Capitalism, can there? Because what they were talking about was
the analysis,
international socialist people, who actually in the end do stand for capitalism as it happened. But we had these meetings and you know and dances and so on. A lot of these people there. And the speaker gets up and denounces Pabloism. People here don't know what Pabloism is. Let alone people who come along for a dance in the 1960s. But they were very successful in getting young people in. But of course, I don't know when they got the chop. But the Labour Party dissolved the Young Socialists
and formed it again.
And then they formed it again as the Labour Party Young Socialists. And then the same thing happened with the Militant. And I don't think the Labour Party's got a youth section.
I think the thing about the youth sections these days are they're not actually called the Young Liberals, the Young Conservatives. They're called student societies. They work through those instead. So you have got something like the Labour Party Student Association Society. It's in particular universities. That's the way I understand it. That it's not an overall thing, and because it becomes. Once you start things like that, even for liberals and conservatives, it becomes something that's a potential power base.
Yeah, it's looking at reformism. And all these Trotskyite organisations are essentially reformists.
Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
Militants basically were like in Liverpool Council. And when I was a member at that time, they actually talked about Liverpool 1984 as being like Petrograd in 1917. I seriously said to me, it's Petrograd 1917, because they were used to 80s, and Soviet Union still exists, but they were still romanticising the Bolshevik Revolution then. Interestingly, I found out the other day, Alan Woods, who used to be in Northern Tennessee with Ted Grant, he's now a cheerleader for Hugo Chavez.
He's actually a Trotskyite, and
the Venezuelan president is obviously
All right. Well, that's kind of what I was getting at towards the end, about detrotification. Basically, a lot of these groups have become very borderline that you could say, yes, they are Trotskyists, because they're so enthusiastic for people like Chavez or Cuba. The guys who I had there, the Communist League, with their... who were selling the Militant, they're actually pro-Cuba. I mean, they're like enthusiastically pro-Cuba, which is like, I mean, that's a no-no. That's not something that Trotskyists do.
I'll take issue with that, Keith. I think that's the influence of... this is only what we're dealing with here is kind of British Trotskyists, and, there are other Trotskyists.
That's true.
They're doing this, support Cuba directly. I think it's influenced from American Trotskyism, because the American Trotskyists... I don't know about the sort of 40s and the 50s, certainly, but certainly a lot of the stuff I've ever seen, say the Spartans or whatever, they have an explicitly, supportive approach to, Vietnam, Cuba.
You're probably right.
I think possibly as some British Trotsky groups decline, especially the ones that were more non-SWP, non-state capitalist, non-state caps, I think they'll gain influence. Again, just as an aside, there's only one of these papers or publications I do buy is Permanent Revolution, I think is very interesting. All right, they are very interesting in the sense that they're talking themselves out of being Trotskyists. I've got to say that their economic analysis by Jeffries and Stuart King is absolutely superb, and it chimes exactly what we in SPGB say about, capitalism is not in terminal decline, it will not collapse in and of itself, it's actually quite healthy, in terms of the way that it's, still revolutionising the means of production and whatnot. They're slightly dodgier about the nature of China, although they now accept it's state capitalist. Another thing, very interestingly, if you are interested in this, if you're a Russian Revolution, Russian history transporter, they're beginning to put back and back and back in years, when it was Russia doing bad. So at the minute they're furiously debating between 1923, Kronstadt, was it 21, when one faction or other was banned. And then they go back all the way to 1919. So obviously their next kind of logical conclusion is to actually, have a decent historical material, and that's what's going on there.
So Permanent Revolution are a very recent one, aren't they? I should probably delete them from the thing. They should probably have a little they should be disappearing off into mid space, because I think that they're obviously pretty non-Trotskyist, aren't they? Probably.
So merely in terms, they may be quite interesting, in terms of being attracted towards more, say, impossibilists. or other kind of, you know, ideas? Because, you know, I can see a lot of people in that group then being interested in saying impossibilism, or, you know, the Anarchist Communist Federation, that sort of thing.
So on, are they... So how far have permanent revolution evolved? Have they become...
The last...
Are they Leninists still?
Yeah, nominally. But then again, some of them are going back into this. They're trying to form popular front with other workers' power splits. So, you know, it's kind of hard to gauge. They've got a lot of sort of interesting NUT militants in North London and that, who are actually kind of all right people. you know, as trade unionists, they're pretty good as well. Some of whom have put up with a lot of shit and harassment, you know, from their own, you know, management at schools or whatever. So they've gained a kind of wider kind of catchment or sympathy. You know, you've had a couple of very good NUT reps who are in the permanent revolution, one of whom was basically fit up and live it out of school anyway. Yeah, so, you know, as it goes, they're, you know, unfortunately they're going back more towards this, you know, popular front ideas. They try to soak up members from Occupy. But, you know, this is their usual modus operandi. To quote a member of Glasgow Branch, it will end it today.
Of course, I mean, the one thing I didn't mention is industrial militancy, because a lot of these guys, it appears to be their saving virtue or something like that. Is that a lot of them are active in trade unions, but to me, what's kind of like it's like, I mean, it's the same with the Communist Party. There was guys in the Communist Party who were very active in the unions and put, you know, and did a lot of good for the unions, but that doesn't excuse it, because the whole thing is that, you know, in Leninism there ain't going to be any bloody unions, because everyone's going to do what they're told. And old Flinney, he actually got a Leninist, and he kind of said, "Look, Tommy, are there going to be trade unions? You know, in your society, are there going to be them?" And he got the bloke eventually to say, "No, there will not be any trade unions." And you know, that's it. It's all very well being an industrial militant, but at the end of the day, you're not going. You know, you're being hypocritical.
Just become the industrial organisers in, say, like China, Cuba, aren't they? You know, so your union rep is actually your guys kicking up the arse telling you to work harder. You know, or your wish.
Yeah, we're talking about what's his name, Alan Woods going to Venezuela. Trotsky's always going.
Yes,
you know,
yeah, you're right.
Come back to Pablo, who was actually a Greek from Michael Raptors. And the Pabloism was, in fact, the Trotsky should go to the Communist Party rather than the Labour Party. Now, it's a dangerous thing to do with the French Communist Party, because you get physically beaten up. Anyway, when Algeria got independence and Ben Bella became leader or dictator of Algeria, you know, Pablo went over there. He was a junior minister in the government of Ben Bella. So, I mean, you know, it's history repeating itself. You know. They've always had this other fatherland. It was Tito in Yugoslavia, then it's in Algeria, I think it was Vietnam.
Vietnam is what I was going to say.
And now it's Venezuela, Cuba, Venezuela. So that they, you know, they do feel the need to identify with some governments somewhere. But the other thing I was going to mention, while I'm sitting on the floor, is my favourite group is the International Bolshevik Tendency. We contest the election here. We went to a meeting down in... what's it called now?
Mary Square.
Danny was there for us, and the man from Workers' Power was there. But these two people had travelled all the way down from Norwich or somewhere just to hand out leaflets denouncing workers' power as But I mean, I don't know whether you've got a copy of the International Bolshevik, whatever it's called, but at least they're honest, and that's what they all are, the Bolsheviks.
Just going on what Rob said about, because I was talking about Russia in 1917. And I mean, Trotskyites believe that 1917 to 24 was an ideal workers' state, and it actually generated some of those souls. But it's quite clear, really, between 17 and 24, and as the SDGB pointed out, as early as 1918, it wasn't a socialist society, but there was massive repression even then. And you mentioned Kronstadt. I mean, I was actually looking up that recently, and the demands of the people at Kronstadt selling to sales and workers, it was no return to pre-revolutionary Russia. They didn't want that. They just wanted some free elections to the Soviets, removing some of the privileges the party was actually had. So So basically, it was basically a sort of socialistic approach that was massively crushed. All anarchists were put in prison, exiled, excuse me. So really, I don't think Russia was ever socialist. It was never an ideal worker state.
Well, yeah. Well, that's our position, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the position is an economic one. It's not that Lenin was a bad guy or whatever like that. It's that that Russia was not in the position to form it. However much a particular group might have wanted to actually, make socialism or whatever you call it in Russia, it just wasn't possible.
The philosophy of permanent revolution is that we can bypass advanced capitalism and just go straight from some sort of agricultural society and go straight through to socialism, bypassing advanced capitalism. I mean, that's going sort of like everything Marx and Engels wrong, but that's what Trotsky had to believe in.
Magic wand.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they were expecting support from the world's working class, the European and American working class, not that.
It's true enough.
If it materialised, if it hadn't materialised, who knows, history might have taken a different route.
Absolutely.
But regarding Russia, I mean, I'd imagine there must be Trotsky's organisations in the former Soviet Union, present-day Russia. Do you know of any?
That's not my thing, that is.
And probably breakaway groups as well. But it always strikes me about what is called the left generally. We don't normally call it the left, but, the convenience, we call it the left or the pseudo-socialists. Whereas in the right-wing organisations, I mean, obviously there's groups, and I don't know how many currently right-wing pseudo-fascist organisations are in this country, probably about 10, maybe.
Mm.
But see, we have a great proliferation in this country and other countries of socialist and so-called socialist organisations, all claiming to be the custodians of the whole truth and nothing but the truth.
Mm.
Now, what is it about? Is there any significance in this, mm-hmm. or is it just purely accidental?
Well, everyone has the but only we have the right.
Yes, sir, yes.
Only we know what's right.
Yeah. But could we take an objective view of our party and the strips? Not always formal, informal, and there was a split a few years ago, a real pantomime that was. But the split of the sections in our party, could we take an objective view of that? Because they're all claiming, both factions and the sub factions, all claim to be the custodians of the whole truth. All claim to be the custodians of the working class interest. Any observation?
Yes. No, I would, yes. Well, obviously, everyone thinks they're right, don't they, basically? Of course, people, everyone thinks they're right, and it's impossible to be subjective about things like that. Objective. Possible to be objective. Everyone thinks they're right, and you can't, I mean, one of my kind of formative things, my lady Helen, she still thinks it's funny, is that we were somewhere with some, and we were listening to some Trotskyist guy, and he was saying, "It is right because it is true," and this sort of thing. And it's these sort of, you can come up with these sort of things of Leninism is right because it is true. And this is gobbledygook, isn't it?
I think what singles out the Socialist Party of Great Britain is that over its 108-year history, there haven't actually been any splits that I know. I mean, maybe there's been one or two. There's been several people who have been expelled, or groups that have been expelled, you know, going back to Libcom in 1974, and one or two other a group that supported women's liberation struggles. And of course, I think the one that Frank was referring to in 91, when two branches of the party were expelled.
Yeah.
But they haven't actually, I mean, correct me on this, they haven't actually been split per se, where a number of people have gone on to form another organisation, which has then continued and developed and, flourished to some extent. I think that, needs to be said, which separates us from a lot of these other organisations as well.
That's a split. Split is it, if they're expelled or they leave of their own accord, they were split.
No, I don't think so. Okay. The branches in 91 were expelled for a particular reason.
Yes,
they didn't leave of their own accord.
Calling themselves a socialist party.
Well, we can't stop them from calling themselves what they like. But the fact is that they acted undemocratically, and they didn't split. You know, we don't agree with the mainstream of the SPDP anymore. We're going to leave. They were forced to leave. You know, I made a mistake about that. I mean, one or two others may have followed suit and gone with them at the same time.
Well, any sensible member would have voted against their expulsion.
Why?
I think this is a discussion you really need later on.
The banana split.
Splits are probably common in Trotsky's groups because of the leadership, and all Leninist groups really. It's, you know, there's plenty of the Stalinists splitting all the time as well, but Trotsky's happened to do it a little bit. But, you know, it's because the centralised leadership and people not being allowed to have their say on certain things and disagreements and not being able to talk out properly, and probably also memberships being quite large and inactive in some ways, large enough with the SWP and Spear and stuff, and they don't particularly look to educate their members as much as, say, we do.
If you... Coming on from this, if you read a lot of the Trotskyist literature, one of the things that comes up is the idea of correct leadership. This is one of the sort of phrases that you get. And the thing is, if you've got a leadership and it does something bad, you need to elect a new one. Therefore, and if the majority don't agree, then you kind of split off. And it's the nature of the beast is that, you know, that's what they do. It's to do with a leadership organisation, if you've got that. Instead of, you know, you elect yourself a new leader and you go off.
Well, since talking about that, it sounds plausible. I mean, if you have a democratic centralism, I mean, you do have these, would-be sort of Trotskyists who want to get to have the accolade of being in the pyramid, top of the pyramid, so to speak, that people ally themselves with individuals in it, whereas maybe in a constitution like ours, that you can put these views there. You might form a kind of coherent group of people in the party. You may have a similar sort of point of view as you do, but I mean, it can come into the sort of debating arena to be aired and then criticised, and maybe, you know, for those members to go away and reflect whether those ideas, we can hold various ideas, but we agree on the objective that we're about. That's the thing. Whereas, I mean, I suppose the leadership structure, like in other parties, means that you will get these factions, and must be the fact that looking at a graph, a geology of all these organisations, maybe is indicative of that, you know, and their frustrations as well. I mean, I don't think they don't have a view about our objective. They say they agree with it sometimes, having spoken to them in the past.
Oh, yeah,
they don't
yeah.
think it's realisable in the way that we think it is. So they must have, in a sense, ours could be a kind of based on a kind of some kind of material basis. But I mean, it's the application, the working out of it. We think it's viable now, whereas they're saying, well, we've got to go to the stage, the transitional stage. So maybe there's something that they think about other workers being able to bring that about. That's why they've probably got this kind of vanguardist idea. But maybe they have to reinforce the idea so they don't think in terms of, you know, doing it now rather than having an intervening period where they see it not taking place. Whether it's the attitude that they're still continuing to think about in terms of then saying workers can't arrive at
a
socialist consciousness until 700 years or something.
Huh? Who was first? Was he? Sorry,
your chair. Well, I was going to say, it's probably what Mike was just saying. I think another thing which I think makes a difference in our case is that people can't just join our organisation. I mean, all these other, whether they're Trotskyists or anything, you know, you just... Well, presumably, as far as I'm aware, sign on the dotted line. Nobody asks you anything about what you know. And that, of course, signals trouble further down the line. So at least when people join this party, they have an elementary idea of what the organisation is on about and what socialism is, and so on and so forth. Whereas these other organisations don't require that. So.
Well, I'm not sure.
Maybe there's some that you know of.
Well, I do, because one of the people who used to be, well, he's still in the party, Darren O'Neill. He used to live where I used to live in Hemel, and when I was living in Hemel Hempstead, Hertfordshire, he joined the AWL, but he didn't just join it. What you have to do is go through a kind of a transitional period. No, you have to go through a sort of period in which you demonstrate that you are willing to sacrifice for the party, and then you become a full member. First of all, you're a kind of provisional member, and then after a given period of time, when you've done some work for them, then you're sort of guaranteed full rights, so far as you have full rights or any rights in.
It's not quite the same, is it?
It's not quite the same, but it's a similar sort of thing. I actually, I would rather have in this party, I would like a sort of cooling off period. I think it's a useful thing to have. In fact, that's actually what we do. But I would prefer that it was actually
cooling off period.
Yeah,
you do. Those are hot-headed.
Yeah, because I think it's easy to adopt positions, and I don't know that it's actually ever happened. But it would be easy for someone to say, yes, I agree with you fully, and I shall sort of like do all I shall do the test, and I should write it all down, and then. The very next month, say, "Oh no, I disagree now," and I'm sure that's happened. I'm sure I've come across people.
Not very often, I don't think.
Oh, okay.
That's happened, yeah.
I actually quite like the idea of a cooling off period. In fact, I think generally speaking, that's what happens. You come into contact with the party, you absorb.
Well, transition period.
It's just not formal, and I would actually quite like to have some sort of formal arrangement like that. So that you got to know it, and you're aware of what's going on. You're not just assuming a position, because it's easy to assume a political position and then to have second thoughts or whatever.
You get your money.
Aye.
Yeah.
I think it's all about newspaper sales. You've got to sell the newspaper.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's really it. You know, the socialist work up.
Yeah.
And you basically get given newspapers to sell. And the criteria for your membership would just on how well you sell the paper.
That was very cruel of me to put that little boy selling that there, wasn't it? There he is. He's yelling there, and down below, there he's sort of yelling as well.
Yeah.
He's a very cute kid, but I don't know as if Trotskyists actually don't have they don't have trousers or shoes these days. I'm not sure if that's a condition of your sort of transitional membership, where your provisional membership is that you're not allowed to wear shoes for 3 months.
Adam. Yeah, but there was a party member in the 1970s in Glasgow called David Donaldson, who left and he joined the SWP. But he was a lazy bugger. He sat on Saturday morning, they used to come and ring his doorbell and say, "Come out and sell the paper." He wouldn't get up. He never got in the end. He mentioned the AWL.
Yeah.
And Darwin got their rules and constitution. And if you're a member of our executive committee, you have to ask permission to miss 3 consecutive meetings, otherwise you're lapsed. But they have to do that with 3 consecutive literature sales. Yeah, you have to ask for a holiday.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I mean, but there's
they have to tithe as well.
There's that letter that you mentioned in yesterday's Morning Star. Did you see it? It's called "Down with Martovism" or something.
That's right.
Yes. And the bloke is criticising
about the articles about God.
Yeah. He's saying that
something more serious.
He said Martov said any Tom, Dick, or Harry can join the Bolshevik or the Russian Social Democratic Party. Yeah. So they do have some sort of selection, but as I say, it's on the basis of being prepared to take orders from the cadres, being disciplined. And I've talked to former SWP man, and I'm the party's central organizer, but their central organizer could go along to a branch and really tell them, shout at them, and say, "Look, you're not doing good enough. You should do more of this." And, it's ridiculous. They are centralized, top down, disciplined.
Because that's one of the things that Leninism means. It means, officially they call it central. Democratic centralism, but it's heavy on the centralism and light on the democracy.
But having said that, there are groups now of you know, like you're saying that they're breaking away from Trotsky and that type of you know, that type of thing. I mean, whether they'll ever get rid of this, you know, Vanguard Party virus, I don't know.
Well, like I was saying, I mean, so far as I was aware, that the only one who even approached that was the Solidarity group from the 60s.
Oh, right.
And they were fairly nice guys, I guess you'd say. I don't like nice guys, but that's the way I could
put it. Did some ex-members get involved in the Solidarity?
Was that another
Solidarity?
The current member is next Solidarity.
Yeah.
Or he knew a lot of people from Solidarity.
Yeah, they did, but they found that in fact the person who was the top man there still had dictatorial attitudes, so they left Chris Palace.
I was just going to say, I mean, I think the SNP by contrast is really easy to join. As an experiment, I know back in my capitalist days about 10 years ago. What someone from one of the autonomous groups was writing a critique of this, and they went along to a demonstration in central London and managed to join get the forms and fill in and join the SWP on no less than 16 occasions. but then again, I mean, what it is there, again, you know, like you say, they're also looking at you to see if you've got the commitment to the organisation. It's almost like an outer party in a party sort of setup. Feel well even about it. But they dissolved their branch structure. I can't remember when. I think it was 2001, 2002, and now they just have regional caucuses.
That's all right.
So they can do exactly what Adam's just said, you know, a central organiser has got even more, you know.
They're a weird lot, those socialists. The socialist workers have always been a bit unusual, in so far as they're willing to sort of say things that are different.
What's that?
It's a youth section of the
youth section.
Who was it said the Communist Party had splits? Was it you?
Communist Party.
They do have. Traditionally, the Communist Party didn't have splits. It didn't have. Up until about 1970, and when it went to pot after that anyway. But up until 1970, it was pretty, you know, it was pretty solid because you could do anything to them. They were so bloody stupid. You could go left, right, and they'd do whatever what you said.
I wasn't talking specifically about CBGB.
Right. Oh, well, British experience.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to ask, I sort of had a question planned for the talk, but I was going to ask when did Trotskyists go completely reformist? I mean, as in...
they've always been the same.
Yeah.
I think they've always been the same. From the very word go, they've had programmes. It's part of Leninism to have a transitional programme. It's part of their culture. And if they abandoned that, and not many people ever... I mean, even for us, it's... I mean, you know, it's very rare that no one has one of those, you know, that groups don't have that. It's quite unusual. Especially from... And anarchists are a bit different because they don't have programmes anyhow, some of them. But it's quite unusual for any social democrat, anyone who's descended from social democracy, you know, from that sort of thing. And from the Labour Party as well. And it's rare that they actually say, oh no, we don't believe in reforms. It's like that. It's very rare, and I mean, I'm not even sure as if the Solidarity group had a. I think they might have had some sort of reform program set up. They might have had.
Yeah.
They didn't stress it. There you go.
Okay, so when do you think they're going to drop the revolutionary rhetoric? Well, that's all it is, obviously rhetoric.
Yeah.
Well, there will be a time when they will drop it completely and just go.
When they drop dead.
they'll
continue in the same path, getting older and greyer.
Rings too many bells, that.
What's that?
Rings too many bells, that one. On a lighter note, I was in Norwich yesterday, and to heard a group of maybe a group of four or five buskers who were doing a folk version of No More Heroes. Could you imagine anybody writing a hit single with mentioning Trotsky in this day and age?
nice angle, the Redskins and Golden.
I did say a hit single.
Party had its own song at one time.
The Redskins had a couple of
minor hits. They did, but very minor. Nothing quite as successful as No More Heroes. Anyway. Did we, huh?
Yeah, party song. No, I've never seen the actual music to it. I've never seen. Have you seen a copy of the music to the party song? Has it ever been played in has it ever anyone ever attempted?
Yeah, guys,
in the music. Yeah. You sure? I'm not so sure.
It's in a copy of the Socialist Standard.
In a copy of the Socialist Standard, yeah.
We could
set up a choir, sing the party song. Apparently it is pretty bad though. It's a pretty bad party song.
Who wrote it? Well,
it's
musical stuff.
It was a German fellow, wasn't it? It was Neumann, I think. Neumann. Oh. Hans Neumann. Who died in the Spartacist uprising? Hans Neumann.
That's it. Thank you very much, Keith. Yeah.
We did fall asleep.